Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where do you live?
City.
You have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
Buck Russell had always been the black sheep of the family.
I'm stunned that I'm related to you.
Until one night.
Buck, we have a problem with the kids. We're stuck for somebody to watch them.
Oh, please, not that.
Can we trust him?
He's my brother, for God's sake.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rewatchability, part of the Entertainment One podcast network. I'm J.M. McNabb, joined as always by...
Uncle Rob!
You are not my uncle, no.
Well, I'm somebody's uncle.
I know, it's...
It does seem wrong.
Calling yourself Uncle Somebody when you're, like, a dude in a basement with a microphone. No, you actually are an uncle.
I am an uncle.
Right?
It's true. Yeah. I guess, we're talking about Uncle Buck this week, spoiler, but I guess he doesn't go by Uncle Buck to his, like, adult friends.
Yeah, he wouldn't say that to, like, his podcast co-host if he had one. Yes, this week we are talking about Uncle Buck, the 1989 comedy written and directed by John Hughes, starring John Candy, of course. I was kind of thinking about this because this is, I guess, going up like the week of American Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so you thought, perfect, American Thanksgiving, John Hughes comedy starring John Candy, Uncle Buck.
Well, we've already done Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, did you? Okay, I don't think I was on.
Oh,
that
I'm
one.
Sorry. Well, that was great. Right.
Yeah. No, so it is, yeah, kind of a funny choice. Before we get into it, I do want to thank all of our Patreon donors. We have paused Patreon donations for the month to make up for last month when we only were able to record a few shows, but we do want to thank everybody for donating. And so I'm not going to plug the website because you can't do anything on it for the month of November. You can go look at it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Remember it for next month. We'll be back to our regular begging next month.
That's what Christmas is all about.
That's right.
All right, well, Uncle Buck, this is a huge movie. Mm-hmm. This is one I can't believe we haven't done on the show because
me neither.
It's been certainly in the back of my mind in terms of like a movie to talk about. You suggested this. When was the first time you saw Uncle Buck?
I first saw it when I was very young. It came out in 1989, so I assume that I saw it, I don't know, right away. I swear to God that this was, I think, my first like favorite funny movie, you know?
Right.
I loved John Candy. I thought he was hilarious in his uncouthness, and yeah, it was great. I was a big fan. I also love like big like gregarious people, you know, with like lots of like energy and you know and laughter. I mean, I found that all very like entertaining when I was a kid. So I love this movie. I haven't seen it since I was young. I don't know why. I mean, I guess I thought because it's like a kid's movie. So I haven't seen it all the way through. I think I've seen it like, you know, I think I've seen a scene here or there, but largely I've just sort of like had these pleasant memories of it. and to sort of like go on for the last 30 years. So I was looking forward to revisiting it. What about you, JM?
Yeah. I think I had a really similar experience as you in that I saw it when I was very young. I think my parents rented it when it first came out. So yeah, 89, or I think it came out towards the end of 89 on video. So probably around there. And yeah, I loved it as a kid. I had it taped off of TV. But
it's illegal.
Like, I think I missed the beginning of it. So like, like watching it now, it's like, oh yeah, like I only remember seeing this opening where we actually find out how Uncle Buck came to live with this family. I think I only saw that like once, and then every other time Uncle Buck was just there and the parents were mysteriously gone. One thing I vaguely remembered about my experience with it was, as much as I loved it, and I love John Candy, like I've talked about on this show how he was one of the first actors where I would just watch any movie he was in. Like, I would just go to the comedy section. If John Candy's in it, I would rent it.
He was great.
But it was also a movie that, like, really creeped me out in parts. Like, there was one part in particular, which we'll talk about at the end. But then, like, I'd forgotten all the scenes that also upset me. I mean, I was kind of a wimpy kid, I guess. But, like, there, like the scene with the clown, which we'll talk about.
Right.
Like, where I, you know, I was like a little kid. Not only are clowns are upsetting, but as we'll, you know, get into, the clown is drunk and gets in trouble for being drunk. And I did not understand any of what was happening. And it was just like surreal and disturbing and ends with this like violence action that kind of comes out of nowhere. So like it just like, yeah, weird scenes. And yeah, and there's more that I like, was like rediscovering as I was watching it this time, like just very it's just kind of a series of bizarre interactions with like little narrative cohesion. I do remember being kind of weirded out by a lot of the movie, even though I would say that I loved it. But like you, Rob, I never watched it again, like, until now. Like, I think the last time I saw it, I was probably, you know, 8 years old or something. Like, it's been a while.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about this movie. It seems like it would have been a natural one to revisit, but, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's just the kind of thing where there are so many other movies that came since that kind of like usurped
right
its place. Like, if you're like, oh, I want to watch a John Hughes movie with John Candy, you're probably going to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Or if you're like, that delightful Macaulay Culkin John Hughes combo, you're going to watch Home Alone. Like,
right.
And I know this movie does have its fans, certainly, and like I'm sure a lot of other people have watched it more continuously than us. But I would, for me, I think that's why. Like, I've never had as much of an urge to go back and revisit it.
Yeah.
Until now.
Well, let's get into it.
Okay, yeah. Can you do the rundown?
Yeah, I will try. So, it's about this family. I don't remember their last name, but they have three kids. There's the
it's the Mitchells, right?
The Mitchells, that's right. Yeah, and there's three kids, including the precocious and extra cursy Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, no, shit. It's Russell, not Mitchell. Russell.
The Russells. I mean, generic name. Sorry if that's your last name. And also Maisie, played by Gabby Hoffman, and a third one, Tia, the moody teenager, who I wrote her name down somewhere, but it's not really, you know. Well, anyway, the point
you
is
mean the actress.
Oh yeah, Jean Louise Kelly.
Right,
that's her name. But
I was like, I could not picture her face before watching this movie. Like, I tried picturing this character in my memory, and I just got Jennifer Grey and Ferris Bueller. I could not come up with the older sister and Uncle Buck.
No. Well, she doesn't she's not as she didn't cement herself in pop culture, I think, the way that the other two kids did anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
But, you know, her character is interesting because, you know, she is having a little bit of a, you know, there's some sort of tension or some sort of something with, like, the parents. I mean, she's a moody teenager. She hates everything. She's sarcastic. She won't acknowledge you or speak to you. And, you know, like, she's a teenager. But these kids, their parents are called in the middle of the night because the mom's dad has had a heart attack, and so they have to travel to go sort of look after him, but they can't find a babysitter, and they call everyone they know, but nobody is willing to do it. It's like 4 o'clock at night or something like that. Nobody wants to watch their bratty kids. But so
well, also, because they have moved from, what is it, Indianapolis? Like,
yeah,
they don't have as many friends there, too. So it's like,
right,
not like they can make that many calls. I mean, they're going to obviously call Uncle Buck, right? Who's,
yeah,
the mom is not a huge fan
of the movie.
But, like, couldn't the dad just stay behind? Or couldn't they bring the kids? Like, there seem to be a lot of other solutions besides, like, putting someone they don't totally trust in charge.
Yeah. But also, like, I mean, Buck shows up and he literally doesn't recognize the two younger kids. Like, he's never met them, it seems like. He has vague memories of the younger one, thinks she's, like, maybe 10. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not as if, like, he's been, like, a part of this family throughout the years, you know. And, you know, we find out a little bit about Buck and who he is. He seems like he is a guy who does not take to responsibility. He's a bachelor. He does have a girlfriend who, you know, has been gracious enough to give him a job. But from their conversation, it seems like she has given him a lot of chances. And he has just sort of let all of them fall to the wayside.
Well, she's trying to give him a job and he doesn't want it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I guess because he doesn't want to work for his girlfriend, just like a pride. Or maybe it's also just his lifestyle. He's basically a professional gambler.
Yeah.
And she is played by the great Amy Madigan.
Mm-hmm, and she's fantastic.
She's always great. I love her.
Yeah. But so Buck promises his girlfriend, Shanice, that he will be there at her tire store to work the next morning. Oh, yeah, this is another reason why the mom doesn't like Buck, is because his girlfriend sells tires for a living. Like, what the fuck is that, mom? She is working in a male-dominated field and killing it. She's a boss lady.
Yeah, how does she drive around in her car? Doesn't have tires? Show some respect.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right.
To
the tire industry. It is weird, like, that the mom hates Buck so much. Because, yeah, he's, like, a bit of a layabout. But he's also, like, very charming. Like, everyone likes him for the most part. Like, I mean, we even get in one especially sad scene after Buck has been there for a while. Like, we see that he's been, like, folded out of one of the wedding photos in the album.
Kids, that's it's what, like, you had to do before Photoshop. It wasn't elegant, but it worked.
But we never find out anything that would prompt a drastic action like that, do we? Or am I forgetting something? Is it just the tires? Like, why would they do that?
This lady hates tires. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it never really sort of gets into that or, like, revisits any aspect of, like, the relationship between Buck and the parents or Buck and his brother or really anything like that.
I do, like, I think in a lesser movie, like, Buck wouldn't want to do this or, like, wouldn't like kids or something.
Right.
But I do love, like, the combination of John Candy being so lovable and just, like, you know, him getting there and him, like, wanting to do a good job and, like, wanting to look after the kids. And, you know, it's harder to forge those connections, but, like, he's not this, like, misanthrope or something.
Yeah. And, I mean, that would be so hard to see John Candy's character play. I mean, I can't even imagine him as he's mean in this movie to people, but, like, he's generally so lovable, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I thought of a reason perhaps why the mom is so distrustful. And I will leave that as a cliffhanger.
They had an affair.
No.
Okay. But so
I'll bring it up later.
The though. Parents, they go off to do the thing that they have to do, and Buck shows up in the middle of the night. The parents haven't, like, woken up the kids and, like, told them or anything like that, so they're a little bit surprised when this person they've never seen is standing in their kitchen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he's trying his best. He makes breakfast. He, you know, he answers all the kids' questions. He does his best. He does call his girlfriend and try to explain why he's not able to show up at work. And he's just not able to get it out.
Hello.
Shanice? Honey? Honey, I have some bad news.
Let me guess. You are not coming into work in the morning.
Just let get. No, but you don't. Would you just let me? Give me. Let me get. Let me get. You're not. Give me a. Oh.
Goodbye.
But it doesn't sort of like bother him. He doesn't like mope about it. He just, you know, he has to do the thing. So. Mm. But yeah. So. He's got to look
then,
after these
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, nothing really happens. It's just like a bunch of kind of episodes of, you know, some stuff happens.
It's pretty like plotless. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not...
Which I kind of like in some ways. Like, I do like the feel of it. And, the you know, the whole opening part, this whole first act of the movie, the other thing that struck me about it is it's so quiet.
Yeah.
Like, it's eerily quiet. There's hardly any music. It's weird. There's a weird tone to it.
Well, it's all like so understated, which is, you know, you don't expect it from a movie that is reputed to be a comedy extravaganza or whatever. Like the opening of the movie is just like the kids coming home from school and having, you know, a kid's conversation. The parents, they're not like wacky parents. They're so like low key. It doesn't even seem like a performance in some
yeah.
aspects. And then like
oh, so low key.
Yeah, I mean the mom in particular. But the and the
they
scenes.
Should give it its own Disney Plus show. It's so low key.
And
I do want to mention something quickly just okay. while we're talking about the setup, and that is how divergent the actual opening of the movie is from the poster for the movie.
Right.
Like, if you look at the poster for the movie, it's John Candy has this crazed look on his face. like he's playing the devil.
Right.
And he's got the cigar and he's got a suitcase. And then on the other side of the door, the family looks terrified, like an intruder is trying to break in. And they're holding their arms and pushing up against the door. They've got a chair jammed up against the door and they all look
wow.
horrified and afraid. And it says, and the tagline is, "Oh no, it's," and then it says Uncle Buck. So like, it makes it look like Uncle Buck is just, you know, terrorizing them and just, you know, foisting himself upon this family. They woke him up in the middle of the night and demanded this huge favor. Like I'm offended on Uncle Buck, the character's behalf, that he would be represented this way
yeah,
in the poster.
That ain't right. He was supposed to work the next day.
I know.
Jeez.
They almost ruined his relationship.
Yeah. That's not cool. Yeah. But yeah, he does, you know, he takes a real shine to the younger kids anyway. It's Macaulay Culkin's birthday a few days later, and he makes giant pancakes with a snow shovel. That's pretty funny. But then there is the
awesome.
Upsetting scene with the clown that you mentioned before.
Oh, my God.
And it's you know, like this clown comes over for the kids' birthday parties, and he is drunk. He says he was performing at a bachelorette party and, you know, says
which,
a line about dildo jokes.
Which bachelorette party is hiring, like, a middle-aged clown?
Well, everybody has their thing. Ladies love clowns, let me tell you.
It's like, did you get a stripper? No, we got the world's saddest clown. We got John Wayne Gacy is going to swing by your bachelorette party. Enjoy, ladies.
Yeah. But is this, I think, where we see the first violent side of Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
He punches this poor clown in the face. I mean, you know, the clown is drunk. He shouldn't be coming to children's birthday parties drunk.
He's drunk and he's an asshole, but, don't attack him. And, yeah, and that was, I just remember being so creeped out by it as a kid.
Yeah. And then...
I don't know.
There's also...
That's the thing. I don't think this was a family movie. I think there were a lot of movies in the 80s that were seemed like family movies, and we all watched them with our families, but looking back at it now, it's like, oh no, that's just the movie my parents wanted to watch, and I watched it with them.
The other big thing is that Tia is, she has a boyfriend, and Buck doesn't like this guy at all, because, you know, he sees him macking out on his niece, and so he threatens with violence.
We got to talk about this. This is insane.
Yeah, he
this whole storyline.
It's crazy. He threatens to I don't even remember, but it seems very violent. And of course, later, the guy is a total douchebag. He's pressuring Tia to have sex, and she doesn't want to. And
okay, that's putting aside where it goes.
Yeah,
what Uncle Buck first sees is simply that this teenage girl who's 15 has a boyfriend at her school, and he's also at the school.
Yeah, presumably he's the same age, or in that range.
This this is the main arc of the movie, is him dealing with her and trying to stop her from seeing this boy who has really all he's done is worn a beret.
Well,
at the start of the movie,
that is enough really to warrant.
But literally all it is that she's had a boyfriend. He just kind of doesn't like the look of him, and most of their interactions are Uncle Buck shaming her for wanting to dates.
Yeah.
And it's really gross.
It's so gross.
Are you crazy?
I can be.
You could have taken his head off.
Yeah, but would he notice?
Can we get something straight?
The guy's a predator and you're his prey.
Oh, really?
You bet.
And how do you know?
When I was his age, I was the guy zooming the girls like you. Pretty face, big chip on your shoulder.
I recommend that you stay out of my personal life.
Your parents stay out of your personal life?
They don't know my personal life.
Have they met Twiddledink?
And it's just, it's so unwarranted. We find some things out about this guy later in the movie. But at the start, it's just her boyfriend. He seems perfectly nice, to be honest, aside from the beret. And yeah, he's just treated like garbage. At one point, she's going to go see her boyfriend, and Uncle Buck's trying to get her to go bowling, and he's like, you can't get pregnant bowling.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you constantly talking about your niece having sex? It's just weird. It's a weird thing to do.
We should not understate the amount of, anxiety or, control that, America in the past, especially in, the 80s, needed to exert on the female body, right?
Yeah. Thankfully, that has...
Totally different
America
now.
Has moved past that. No, totally. And we're probably not the best equipped to talk about it. But it's definitely, a thing that was normalized through movies and pop culture. And this movie especially is just it's...
Yeah.
And again, this is the main story of Uncle Buck, is, him... essentially being vindicated in the eyes of the niece for insinuating himself into her life and trying to prevent her from seeing this guy. We'll talk about it as it goes, but it's certainly weird and uncomfortable at the start.
Totally.
That he would immediately assert this kind of patriarchal dominance over this teenage girl who he barely knows.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's it's not like he is keeping her safe or anything, because he prevents her from going out on this date with the guy, brings her to a bowling alley. First thing that happens is she gets, like, harassed by some, like, bowler who looks like he has, like, a herpes on his lip. And
this part also creeped. This is part that scared little JM number two, is the guy with the toothpick in his mouth.
Yeah.
Because he has this, like, scar that was, like, I remembered it more as, like I thought, because he kind of, like, almost chokes on the toothpick.
Yeah.
I kind of remembered as, like, does he, like, stab? Does the toothpick, like, protrude through his upper lip something? And nothing that bad happens, but I remember being upset by it.
I mean, it's definitely upsetting how, this old creepster dude comes on to Tia, really just so that Uncle Buck can come and you know, intervene. But,
the bowling alley was not the sanctity of innocence that Buck claimed it was.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And also, this is where we find out more about how Buck, you know, makes his bucks, if you will, and that is by cheating at the ponies.
So this is where I wanted to talk about perhaps the reason why the mom is so put off by Buck.
Okay.
And that is, there is a fan theory. I don't even want to call it a fan theory because I think a lot of it is just, like, in the text of the movie. But there has been a suggestion online that Buck is connected to the mob.
Yeah. I saw that. Potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, because when they first bring up this thing, I mean, it's very cryptic and vague, right? It's like, we're going to do this thing. There's a score and you don't know what it is. Could it be like theft? Could it be, you know, a hit? We don't know.
Well, I mean, obviously he's got some kind of connection because he's cheating at the races.
Yeah.
But then also, like, I mean, later in the movie, he makes reference to, like, fixing parking tickets for someone. And again, this would explain the thing, like, maybe the mom knows something about his past. And then, like, I even read one comment that was like, you know, maybe he was like a mob enforcer, which would explain why he's constantly attacking people.
Oh, my God. That makes a lot of sense.
Right?
Oh, my God. He's like Tony Soprano. It's like, I have a totally different view of this movie now.
Yeah.
That giant pancake scene isn't so cute. There's probably cocaine in there.
Yeah. Anyway, something to think about.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, so, and then, like, the big sort of conflict or whatever of the movie, the climax, is that Buck is going to go to do this race fixing cheating thing. And, you know, what's he going to do with the kids? He's got to bring them with him. And he feels a little bit conflicted about this because I guess kids aren't great at the racetrack, but it never stopped my dad. But so they're going to go to this racetrack where, you know, who knows what would happen to these kids, you know. But instead,
he might have had to use them as collateral.
That's right. That's right. Let's put Macaulay Culkin on Who Has Seen the Wind? But instead, Tia goes missing. She says that she's gone to some slumber party and disappears. And so Uncle Buck knows.
Well, no, she doesn't say she's gone to a slumber party. She says she's going to a party and we'll be back in a couple of days.
Right, yeah.
And Gabby Hoffman says it must be a slumber party.
That's right, yeah. But, so Uncle Buck, he has to go and, you know, stop whatever is going to happen there. So he uses his psychic abilities to figure out where this party is.
No, he drives around and, like, runs into some other parents who
Okay, but even the first time, the first time that he went and he found her at, like, some, it was some, like, party in the woods or something.
What was that? It was, like, this weird, it was like a pioneer village or something. Like, it was this weird stone house in the middle of the woods. That was weird. Like, a lot of this movie feels like a half-remembered dream from my childhood. Like, I remember seeing that and just being like, this is where older kids hang out, in these, like, stone buildings in the middle of the woods with, like, you know, barrel fires. Like, that's what I thought, like, cool kids did in their teen years.
oh man, it'd be awesome to get drunk. We just can't find a stone cabin.
Yeah, and then the actual house party too. Like I remember being very vivid and very. It's also just strange the way it's photographed. Like it's very. I don't know, like, it's all drained of color. It's very gray, mm-hmm. and it's very, like, there's something very bleak about, even though it's, like, jam-packed full of people, there's something kind of,
It's like he's descending into hell. And he's descending into yes. his, like, worst impulses, you know, the drinking, the carousing, the partying, you know, and mm-hmm. it's diverging him from this place that he's, you know, this person that he's becoming, the responsible one. The one who can, right. you know, take care of kids, maybe, or something. Or it's just, you know.
And the next part is the scene that really, this is the third and most terrifying scene for me when I was a kid. And that is when he tracks down Bug. We didn't mention that the boyfriend's name is Bug.
Right. But close to
presumably
Buck.
I know, right?
I think that they're saying something like Buck and Bug. Maybe that's why Buck knows, like, what is up with Bug, because, you know. He was Bug.
Well, he does say that. He's like, she's like, how do you know? And he's like, because I was him. So yeah, his struggle against Bug is the struggle against himself, against his his resistance to reforming his life with Amy Madigan. It's a rejection of all of his worst impulses.
There could be some good grad essays with this movie, students.
I wrote my doctoral thesis on Uncle Buck. But so, oh, it's just so, like, I mean, on one hand, I appreciate, you know, like, John Hughes is a weird guy,
mm-hmm.
or was a weird guy, was an interesting filmmaker. Like, in lesser hands, Uncle Buck would have just, like, burst into the room and, like, looked for Bug or whatever. But instead, we get this bizarre scene where he appears behind the door. So Bug is in with the girl. We don't know who it is yet. We think that it's Tia. Yeah. It's really Tamara. We think that it's Tia, but she is. Now this is the moment where we find out that Buck was right about Bug.
Right.
That he is a sleazebag because clearly the woman he's in bed with is not consenting. She's saying like, no, I don't want this. And Uncle Buck appears on the other side of the door, which is locked, and proceeds to use an electric drill to break the lock and burst in, and he's all backlit. And it's like it's all shot
movie.
Like a horror. It's totally a horror movie. Like it's that, and it really freaked, even though I, as a kid, I knew it was Uncle Buck and he was trying to rescue his niece. Like it was still really freaky. And then it is Bug, but then we see he's with another girl, and it's just like this weird, it's this weird moment where there's no
something?
Dialogue. Yeah, and he's and then you just see him advance towards Bug, and then it cuts, and we don't see what happens for a while.
Yeah,
and it is disturbing.
It definitely seems like he murdered that kid with a drill,
right? It does,
which is gruesome. That's a bit gruesome.
So then Buck is driving around and he finds his niece and yeah. she's like, you were right
yeah.
about Bug. He's a creep. But she doesn't say like, hey, I was also like capable of dealing with him on my own.
Yeah.
I didn't need you like constantly embarrassing me and harassing me and, mm-hmm. you know, dragging me to terrible bowling alleys.
I forgot to mention earlier in the movie, Tia had sort of set it up so that Buck's girlfriend thought that he was cheating
oh, right.
on her with Laurie Metcalf across the street.
Oh my God. Another absolutely insane scene. Like the scene where Laurie Metcalf and John Candy
yeah.
are dancing to the Beau Brummels and like the camera work gets all like they put on like a fisheye lens and do all these POV shots
yeah.
all of a sudden.
It's so weird.
Very strange. Yeah. And yeah. And Laurie Metcalf is like, playing this like wealthy divorcee who's just like, I mean, she's brilliant
she's
and I love her. And clearly this is the direction they wanted, but she's playing it so like if you had found out that like she had murdered her husband, it would
that
make
would
sense
say.
Based on how she was acting.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre performance.
Hi.
Oh my God, what are you doing?
The laundry, what's it look like? Washing machine's still broken, so I thought I'd use the microwave. Nuke them up, you know. Heats them up pretty good, too. You know, it kills the germs and the odors that they cause.
You don't know what you're doing. You're bored out of your mind. You need a little adult supervision.
Excuse me?
Then there's that other weird scene where, like, Uncle Buck has to go to the school and, like, the principal's, like, talking about how awful Gabby Hoffman is.
Right.
And, like, she has a big mole on her face and he's like, here's a quarter, go get a rat to gnaw off. It's just so weird. It's so strange. And I just find it so, like, there were no, all, you know, to the movie's credit, I guess, there were no, like, real, like, saccharine moments in the midst of all this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was basically just, like, like, weird, upsetting scene after weird, upsetting scene until the end where the parents come back and everyone's like, hey, Uncle Buck, who was pretty all right.
Yeah.
And he reconciles with his girlfriend.
Basically, that's it. But, I mean, there is a little bit of, like, you know, warm-hearted moments. Like, the reason that he insults this poor woman's appearance is that, yeah, she's, you know, she's saying that the kid is awful when she's just, you know, being a kid. And I felt, you know, I don't know, that connected with me. That related to my experience.
I liked it, but she was just so, like, surreal. She was just so over-the-top villainous. It was like all of a sudden it was a Roald Dahl story, yeah, or something. It's like, what school is this? Why would she talk like this?
Flashback to her, you know, somebody making fun of her face, and that's why she became the person who was mean to the children. It's a vicious cycle.
And then, you know, at the end when the parents come back, like, the mom and the daughter have, like, a big hug, like, because Uncle Buck saved their relationship,
yeah,
by, like, oh, my God, we didn't even talk about what happened to poor Bug. Poor Bug, it turns out, was duct taped in the trunk of Buck's car.
And that's pretty mob.
Totally, yeah. And, I mean, like, if it wasn't for the mob connections, like, the epilogue of this story would be Uncle Buck going to jail, because you can't do that.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's psychotic and a little bit warm-hearted, yeah.
I honestly, like, my big takeaway from this movie, not to get too far ahead, but is, like, I don't know if any of this would have worked if it wasn't for John Candy being,
no,
like, one of the most endearing people on the face of the earth at that time.
I mean, he just has, like, such an amazing smile, and, like, it's kind of, yeah, you sort of gloss over everything. I mean, like, it could also have to do with maybe, like, the development history of this movie. Like, you know, John Hughes always overwrites everything, so maybe, like, more of that came out. I heard, like, the first cut of this was, like, 3 hours long or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, also, yeah, what I was going to say about the mom and the daughter reconciling, like, I didn't remember anything especially bad happening at the beginning of the movie between those two. Like,
no.
I think they said, like, they weren't as close, but it didn't seem like they had any severe falling out that would warrant that kind of reconciliation at the end.
Well, it just seems like they have, like, the typical teenage daughter-mother tensions, which, I mean, maybe that's enough. Like, maybe, you know, that's enough for them to have, like, that journey back to, you know, being like, hey, we actually like each other, you know.
I won't drink coffee anymore, Mom. And we murdered Bug. All right, well, that was the rundown. Thank you, Rob. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back. I have some trivia questions.
Okay.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We're back on Rewatchability, part of the Entertainment One podcast network. We're talking about Uncle Buck.
Mm-hmm.
I have some trivia questions for you about Uncle Buck.
Of course, now with inflation, it's Uncle 10 bucks. Sorry. That was not a great joke.
Hey, it's no worse than my Loki joke. All right. Well, I did want to talk about, you know, kind of leading into the first question, I want to talk about something, and that is that they have made a few TV shows of Uncle
right.
Buck.
Yeah.
There was a 1990 sitcom starring Kevin Meaney, and then they made a sitcom in 2016 with Mike Epps. It was a black family in the 2016 version. I never saw the more recent one, but I do remember watching the 1990 sitcom.
Oh, really?
When it came out. Yeah, like I remember being a fan of the movie and excitedly watching Uncle Buck.
Even though there's no John Candy?
Yeah, I don't know. I remember watching all kinds of dumb shows because they were movies. Mm. Like, I remember watching the pilot of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Right.
Which was really bad. I remember being super excited for the A League of Their Own sitcom. Which, they're now making another show based on that movie. So,
oh, really? But it's going to be all guys.
Yeah. Right. it's just about the major league. No, but I remember watching the Uncle Buck show. I don't remember liking or hating it. I just remember being excited that it existed, and I think it was pretty promptly canceled.
Mm-hmm. I think it lasted one or two seasons.
Yeah. But, man, it is weird. I watched the beginning of the pilot, which is on YouTube. Did you watch any of that?
No.
So it just opens with Uncle Buck just making breakfast, and the kids come in, and then the teenage daughter comes in and she's wearing a midriff revealing outfit.
Uh-oh.
And then yeah,
she's gonna get violent.
No. And then literally a minute later they do the opening theme song, and it's just a very similar scene where the daughter's wearing another revealing outfit and Buck's shaking his head. And but he's just making breakfast. And there's lighthearted banter. There's, you know, some scorn about, you know, choosing her own clothes and, you know, whatever else is going on. I don't know. It was all very lighthearted and silly. And I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, okay, when are the parents going to come in? Why is Buck making breakfast?
Yeah,
Did the grandparent have another heart attack? What's going on?
They're going around.
And then the next scene after the theme song, Buck's at home, and a woman from the insurance company comes. He wants to, withdraw money from some kind of insurance trust, and presumably, I think, for gambling. So he's also, he's completely gone back on his redemptive arc.
Right.
He's back to gambling, it seems. And then it also, it seems like they just watched the movie and took some of the more superficial aspects and fleshed it out in this dumb sitcom way. So we had the thing with the daughter, which was not good in the movie either. But then also Laurie Metcalf being super into Uncle Buck in the movie.
Can't
they
not
took
have
that scene. Yeah. They kind of replicated it with this insurance employee who,
okay,
basically says Uncle Buck can't withdraw any money from this trust unless he has sex with her. Keep in mind, we're 4 minutes into the first episode. And this whole time you're thinking, where are the parents? I'll tell you where the parents are. The parents are dead, Rob.
Of course they're dead.
The parents have died off screen between the movie and the show. That's
possibly
why
murdered
this trust
by the mob.
Well, we find out it was in a car accident, but I mean, was the car monkeyed with?
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know. Some kind of retaliatory
explosion.
Maybe Bugs was also connected, right?
Oh.
And so it's a mob war between his parents and Uncle Buck. The parents are dead. It's insane. It's an insane show. It's good. I only watched the first few scenes. I did not watch any more. Maybe it gets great. I doubt it. Supposedly, John Hughes wasn't happy about it. I don't know if this is true, but I read that he didn't know it existed until the producers contacted him to get some footage of the house
hmm.
of like the house they used in the movie to kind of use as like an establishing shot. And they just call him like, "Hey, can we get the house for the Uncle Buck show?" And he's like, "The what now?"
Oh shit!
And yeah, and no one from the movies in the show. But okay, this brings me to the trivia question.
Well, actually, I saw that's incorrect. The guy who plays Pal, the sexual harasser at the bowling alley, he shows up.
Oh, okay. As the same character?
He's playing a different character. He plays one of, John Candy's character's drinking buddies.
Right. Okay, well, the movie, or the show, the sitcom, also featured in a small role. Which future Party of Five star?
Ooh, okay. I got to think about my Party of Fives. Got Nev. Got mm-hmm. Matthew Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there so many, animal? Is there, like, was Peter Coyote in there? Okay, I'm going to say Nev. I'm going to say Nev. Campbell.
No. No, it wasn't Nev.
Damn it.
Maybe if the show had been made in Toronto or something.
Well, that's what I thought. Maybe it was.
No. I do remember seeing her in like a Kids in the Hall skit.
Oh, really?
Like even before Catwalk.
Oh, wow.
But no, it was Lacey Chabert.
Oh.
Played a character called Nancy.
Nancy.
These are tough now. I feel like the last trivia questions you gave me were pretty hard.
That's fair. Yeah, I've been getting some really obscure stuff for you. Bring it.
Okay. This one's an easier one. But which other 1989 movie? So this movie was in 1989. It was a big hit. It was number one at the box office for 3 weeks. But there was another movie in 1989 in which John Hughes was also credited as the screenwriter. Which one was that?
Just the screenwriter?
He just wrote it. This was the only movie he directed that year, but he wrote another movie.
No, I can't think of it. I give up.
Would it help if I told you it comes out around Christmas?
Oh, yeah. Is it Christmas Vacation?
It is Christmas Vacation.
Okay. Actually, that was my first thought, but then I was like, that can't be the same year.
Yeah,
I should have just had faith.
And last question, the actor who played Bug, a guy named Jay Underwood, I assume he got the role because he previously starred in a well-received family movie, or I think it was well-received, but it was like a, I think it was a family movie, though I was reading the Wikipedia, and the things that happened in the movie did not all sound like, some of them sound like Uncle Buck, very upsetting, but it was like a fantasy movie, came out in 1986, in which he was the star, sort of what he was best known for. I saw it when I was a kid. I would love to revisit it sometime. I've only the vaguest memory of it. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, well, I happened to check out this guy's IMDb. I believe it's The Boy Who Can Fly, or Who Could Fly.
The Boy Who Could Fly, yeah. Did you ever see that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's possible.
I watched it on, like, the Family Channel when I was a kid, and it was weird.
I also saw that he played Sonny Bono in the Sonny and Cher story.
You say really?
I love can't pay the rent. Yeah. And now he's like a Christian preacher.
Yeah, he's a pastor.
Oh.
No. So he reformed.
Feels guilty for all of that shitty stuff he did.
Yeah, and just quickly, I do want to mention that The Boy Who Could Fly, directed by Nick Castle.
Whoa, The Punisher.
Who played Michael Myers.
Oh.
No.
That's
played
Frank
Michael
Castle.
Myers. He wrote Hook.
Wow. That's amazing.
The only last bit of trivia I wanted to mention about this movie is the fact that they remade this movie in India a few years later.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's just like a John Hughes thing, because I know, like, in India, Baby's Day Out was huge. there are like seven remakes of Baby's Day Out for some reason, and they were all huge movies.
Wow.
But they made a remake called Uncle Bun.
Okay, close.
It is all on YouTube.
Did you watch it?
I watched some of it, and some scenes looked like very similar, like the scene where, like, you know, they're calling up the Buck character, and, you know, like the mom's in the background after getting this bad news. Like, it looked like almost like a similar composition. But then, like, that scene was like pretty quickly followed by like this nightmare sequence where, like, I don't even know who the character was supposed to be, but they emerge from a coffin and their head spins around like in The Exorcist.
Oh my God. I think that's Tia.
Yeah. And then I don't even remember. I read about it on Wikipedia, but it was like they actually came up with, like, the big change was they had a reason why the mom didn't want the Buck character. He's not called Buck. I think he's called Charlie or something. There's a reason why the mom didn't want him to come look after the kids.
Okay.
And that reason was, like, she blamed him for the death of her sister.
Oh my God.
Who, like, had committed suicide years earlier.
Because she owed money to the mob.
No, I don't know what it was, but then, like, at the end of the movie, you find out that, like, she had committed suicide for some other reason because she was, like, involved with, she, like, cheated on someone or something.
Oh.
And wasn't involved with, like, her relationship with Charlie, but he, like, this is, again, just going off the Wikipedia description, but he, like, he let people believe that it was because of him to, like, keep her reputation in good standing.
Because that's not
so people
funny.
Wouldn't know about this, like, it's not as funny as, like, giant pancakes, that's
no.
for sure. Yeah, it's a very upsetting backstory for Uncle Bun.
Wow, that's
there you have
that's
it.
Dark. That's dark.
It's dark. I mean, it is also a musical.
That makes it a little bit better. I like a little, you know, it brings some levity to it.
Yeah. So that's what I could find about Uncle Buck. I don't know. Did you read anything?
I did see that there was a couple of, a couple of people who show up in the movie that are notable, like little Anna Chlumsky is in there,
right.
Apparently.
Who would later kill Macaulay Culkin with her.
That's right. That's right.
Her carelessness, leaving that mood ring lying around.
Makes me so angry. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's a little reunion there. And also, apparently, Patricia Arquette did additional voices.
Really?
Yeah. So, you could hear her.
Think she was, like, doing some Foley work, making the car backfire?
Yeah, that was her. That was all her. Yeah, I don't know. Was there anything else that I found about this? No. No, there wasn't. Nope.
Yeah, I didn't see that much, you know, hasn't been that much discussion about it other than, hey, it's Uncle Buck.
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird because it seems like such a beloved movie. I know that I loved it. Also, there are, like, so many, you know, great performers in it. And, like, we barely even talked about Macaulay Culkin, but this was, like, his breakout role. I mean, I don't know if he'd done anything before this, but he was like...
Oh, yeah, he was in that Burt Lancaster movie.
Okay.
What was that? I don't remember.
But you can tell why he became, like, the huge star that he was. He just has, like, this, like, energy and this, like, you know, and the scenes that he shares with John Candy are really something. It's like, you know, it's great.
Oh, yeah. He's so good in this. Rocket Gibraltar is the name of the movie I was trying to think of. He was in a few things, but he's so good in this movie. I think, you know, I've heard various stories about how he was cast in Home Alone. And, like, some people said that, like, John Hughes wrote Home Alone for him. And I don't think that's true.
Right.
I think that he got the idea from the scene where Macaulay Culkin won't let Amy Madigan into the house.
Right.
But I think he was originally going to try to get a different kid, or at least he, like, auditioned tons of kids. He didn't just give it to Macaulay
Culkin.
Need
Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, but no, he's great. He's so charming, and so is Gabby Hoffman. They're
yeah.
such good kid actors, and yeah, that's my biggest problem with this, or not problem. My biggest source of sort of conflict in informing my opinion of this movie is the fact that I like all of the people in it so much, and I enjoy, you know, spending 90 minutes with John Candy and with these kids, and like, you know, and having them kind of like inhabit this space that seems so familiar, because it reminds me of other things. Like, it feels like the Home Alone house,
yeah.
And you know, it feels like, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles some of the time. But like, so much of the actual core of the movie, like what's actually happening, I just find like unpleasant, and yeah, and I'm not sure even like what they're going for. Like, it feels perhaps intentionally sloppy and unfocused, but yeah, I don't know. I would be also interested to know like what was in like the longer cut, because like it seems weird that they were like had a 3-hour cut, had to whittle it down, and they're like, no, we need the drunken clown scene, or like, you know,
yeah.
But I guess it's funny, you know. Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird movie, and I don't know if I was expecting it to be quite so weird. I knew I found it weird as a kid. But I think going into it now, knowing it was this beloved thing, and knowing that I still loved it in spite of being like creeped out by certain scenes, I thought I would watch this movie and think like, oh man, like I was this oversensitive kid, and like this isn't strange or disturbing at all. And instead I watched it and I was like, what? Like, why would they do that?
You've been validated.
I feel like I have been to a certain extent, because they make some very strange choices. And it's also this, you know, weird intersection that happens in a lot of John Hughes movies, specifically around this period, where like it's this weird intersection of like very like down to earth characters and like realistic situations mixed with these like bursts of slapstick cartoony bits. Like, I mean, Home Alone's one of the better examples of that, because that, you know,
right, it's like family drama nestled within ultraviolence.
Yeah, it's like 2/3 of like, yeah, like a realist drama, and then the third act is like a Looney Tunes cartoon. And, you know, that's its own thing, and it's kind of been canonized in a way where we all accept that. But like in this movie, they have scenes where like at one point Amy Madigan at the end of the movie, there's been this like tender moment where like, you know, he's reconciled with the niece after presumably murdering her boyfriend. But and then they realize that he's eavesdropping on their conversation. So Amy Madigan like slams the door into his face, and he flies across the room and is not getting up. And she's like laughing about it. And I mean, in a realistic world, like, he would have some kind of severe head trauma and everyone would be horrified.
Well, not to mention that bowling ball from earlier that fell on his head.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, maybe if the balance was shifted slightly where there was like more of that in the movie, it would be less bizarre when it crops up occasionally. I don't know. It's a bit of a mess of a movie, but I haven't quite landed on how I feel. What about you? Do you think it was rewatchable?
Yeah, I do. You know, it is so weird. And like, I just think that like, that's part of sort of reconciling with John Hughes movies, is how like dark and violent and sometimes like darkly sexual that they are. I don't think that, I mean, they're all like that. So, I mean, I guess that like, yeah, I sort of expected it here, but for me, the John Candy and like the kids, they do save it to a large degree for me. I mean, just John Candy's so funny. Like, I laughed out loud, you know, so many times during this movie for dumb reasons. And, you know, it made me like very like like wistful for him and for that kind of performer, you know? Like, I feel like it's just like so nice and giving, you know? Like, it's a very generous performance. And I really liked the openness of it. It seemed like so understated in parts. Like, there were comedy scenes. Like, now every comedy scene has to have a button, you know? But this, it doesn't. Like, sometimes scenes just seem to, like, end without, like, you know, a finishing note. But it feels like realistic and like settled in. I really like that. But some of it is weird. I mean, the parents, I don't know if I just expected more from them, because in Home Alone, like, Catherine O'Hara is so like amazing and wonderful and like such a, you know, a great character. And the dad is okay too. But in this movie, like, the mom, she's just so, she gives nothing. And like,
she's got it's another thing that, like, I found, you know, I remember like registering with me in an emotional way I couldn't understand it as a kid, and watching it now I still don't understand, is her performance. And like, even before she finds out that her dad had a heart attack, like, she seems like upset about something.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like she's going through something.
Like some sort of trauma.
There's something going on with her that's never even like brought up in the movie. And it is weird. And maybe it's something to do with the daughter and like their fractured relationship. But we don't get enough of her character to like really justify how bizarre that is.
It's and, super strange.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Like, yeah, the parents in Home Alone. I mean, they certainly have more to do, but...
Yeah. Well, I also...
And there's the other weird part with the mom is, like, remember when she checks in with Buck and he's, like, telling her he overfed the dog, and she's, like, almost sounds like she's, like, laughing, but she's, like, crying?
Yeah, she's, like, crying because the dog drank out of the toilet bowl.
Yeah, I don't know, but it sounds like she's laughing, like she's almost hysterical, but she's crying, and like, it's not a big deal. Like, I get it, she's going through a thing, but like, and then there's the thing with the photo where she folded him out of the wedding photo. I don't understand this movie.
She's in love with Buck. That's what it is. That's why, I don't know. It's such an interesting movie. I would watch it again. I don't know. I'm going to say rewatchable, but there's a lot to contend with in this. What about you, JM?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it is ultimately rewatchable in that I'm happy to watch any John Candy performance again. Mm-hmm. And but you know, like, I honestly, like I said earlier, I don't see this movie working at all with another actor.
No, I can't picture anybody who it would work with.
Like, I read like they were gonna do it with Danny DeVito or someone at one point. Like,
no. Well,
I like Danny DeVito, but like, you need, you know, there's just something about John Candy.
He was the best. Yeah. Also, did you find it weird that, you know, the dad in the movie had a heart attack and both John Candy and John Hughes died of heart attacks?
Oh, shit. I didn't even think of that.
It sort of spooked me out a little bit.
John Candy, I loved John Candy so much when I was a kid. I can't overstate that. I remember where I was standing and who told me that John Candy had died. Like, that, that was like, you know, when we hear like our parents' generation talk about like how they know where they were when Kennedy. They heard JFK had died. Yeah. For me, that was that. Like,
I was watching JFK. The most,
which he is in.
Yeah. Right.
It's all connected, man. No, but I remember just being like, I remember I was at school and like, a kid I knew's dad was coming to pick them up, and like, I saw him in the hall and said hi, and he was like, "John Candy, did you know John Candy died?" And I was just devastated.
Why do you just tell a kid that? That's not necessary.
Yeah.
But
Santa Claus has also died.
Oh,
what?
My God. I remember hearing when he died as well. I think I heard it on the YTV, kids news or something. Yeah, because I remember he was shooting that movie Wagons East.
Right.
And they had to, finish it somehow.
Yeah, they used, it was an early CGI, an early example of, CGI-ing a dead actor.
Yeah. I mean, I could never watch that movie because it was,
No, I've never watched it.
I think it was watching John Candy die.
It was, a combination of, outtakes and, I think some kind of... I don't think it was, created, a CGI version, in a Star Wars movie today. I think it was, more, using computers to kind of place him
when they
scenes that they already shot his... into. Yeah. But, again, I never saw it either because, it seemed upsetting and not a good movie. I was happy to watch it, but I do think, I think there are some weird moments that are more strange than funny, but I also like movies like that too, so I can't really complain. The thing that I would most complain about is that the central sort of driving force of the narrative is this story about him kind of repeatedly shaming his niece.
Yeah.
And then ultimately attacking her boyfriend, who was a terrible person, but retroactively, including that detail doesn't make all of his earlier behavior when he didn't have that information okay. So I don't know, mildly rewatchable for me.
All right.
Well, that's it for this week on Rewatchability. As always, you can subscribe and review us on whatever podcasting app you listen on. You can find more episodes at rewatchability.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Rewatchability. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchability. Instagram, I still don't know the thing for that because I'm not on Instagram.
It's just at Rewatchability.
All right, perfect. And and until next time...
If you need someone to look after your kids, give me a call.
Rob is available. He's vaccinated and ready to live in your house rent-free.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.